You know, we don't often talk about the Sixth Amendment. Plenty of others get plenty more attention. But our system of justice and those facing it find themselves facing new challenges in this pandemic. So what's happening in Wisconsin's courtrooms? What about its prisons and jails? It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent, and this is your State Capitol Report. We begin the hour with Wisconsin State Public Defender, who's ready to handle your questions about our courts. I'd be curious to hear what your takeaways have been in our experiences with the justice system, and you can call 1-800-642-1234. We're live on this Memorial Day. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kelly Thompson's Wisconsin State Public Defender. And Kelly, good morning. Welcome to you. And what do you see in our state courts right now? What's happening?
Well, good morning, Lee. And thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's been a challenge. Let's just say that it's a challenge during our, what I would put in quotes, normal times. But during a pandemic, those challenges have certainly escalated and have been exacerbated. Like everybody else, we have the routine of what to do during these very difficult times in our own lives. And so as individuals, we're following what the governor has put in place for safer at home and what the guidelines that have been suggested by federal individuals and CDC. But on top of that, we also have the courts and the Supreme Court's guidance, and we have local rules, and we have county rules, and we have jail rules. So on top of all of that, we are trying to navigate the criminal justice system during a really difficult time. And as you know, and as many people know, our constitutional rights don't take a break during a crisis, and they don't take a break during a pandemic. So we need to be able to go about our business as much as possible during these really difficult times.
So we have this statewide task force that's now issued guidelines for Wisconsin courts to hold in-person proceedings. Are we getting back to those? What kinds of trials here have been suspended?
Well, exactly. So the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice Rogenstadt, put together this task force, and it was important because she made sure to have individuals from across all expertise. So we were able to be part of that as well. And it is looking forward on what to do to get back to, you know, some of the more regular proceedings as much as possible. But we haven't been able, you know, we've been going forward. So from day one, from that first, the beginning of March, we've continued to have court hearings as much as possible. So things like bail, intake, preliminary hearings, even some more what we would consider more difficult or more serious, like sentencings, have been able to go forward. We representing cases like mental health commitments, so those all have that have different time guidelines have had to go forward. We have not had jury trials, and that's the one thing that I think people have focused on. What about jury trials? So while the Supreme Court task force kind of looked at all things across the board, they looked at everything from what they would call re-engagement, how do we get our individuals, you know, to re-engage in the system, but also to those very, very important jury trials and how are we going to do that going forward. And the task force put out some guidelines, which were important, but it really does focus on local control. So local counties and criminal justice coordinating councils getting together and saying, what works for us? How can we do, when we're ready to do a jury trial, and obviously when is important, how do we go forward with that? But because of an individual's rights, again, getting back to the constitutional rights and something called a speedy trial, individuals have these rights. So it's how do we go forward during these very difficult times with people's constitutional rights? There is one that is scheduled to happen in this next week. Will it happen? I don't know, but it is scheduled to happen. And so everyone's putting in place how you can social distance. Where can where can we sit with jurors to talk about the case? What kind of technology do we have to put in place? The basics, which we all have talked about. How do we have hand sanitizer? How do we have protective wear? So it's going to be a complicated process throughout the summer. It'll be an interesting one to watch, but it's going to be very complicated because so many factors have to go into consideration. And as an attorney, one of the first questions and concerns that we have to talk about with our client is, do you want this? I mean, you are bringing in people for a jury trial that very likely don't want to be there. I mean, these are individuals that are scared to be there. And so those, you know, really basic questions that we wouldn't have to talk about during a normal course of business are very big considerations for us.
Kelly Thompson's Wisconsin State Public Defender. She joins us this morning and happy to answer your questions about our state's justice system during this pandemic at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. These hearings that have been going on since the quarantine started, are those happening virtually? Are they happening through video conferencing?
Most of them virtually through video conferencing, even what, you know, most of us are using on conference calls like Zoom, and use it depending on the technology, because each courthouse, each county has different technologies. Some are very advanced, some are not so advanced. Some hearings have been done in person. Some counties have had, you know, I listened to the news before you listen to news and said now in all 72 counties, that has not been the case. And so some courtrooms have been able to have had court actually physically in court, making sure, again, they're putting in place social distancing and what have you, but they've had in-person court hearings. In our larger urban areas, that has not happened in quite some time, so those have been more virtual, again, with the use of technology and then Zoom video conferencing. But this is something that, you know, we've all had to step up and really get in place quickly. Is many of us have not had the technology. We were not prepared in a lot of ways because nobody saw this coming. And each courthouse, each county has different financial capabilities and has different abilities for technology.
Kelly, are courts expect? I mean, what have you come across when you're doing these video conferencing hearings? What are some of the limitations that you found?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and there have been many. I will say, first and foremost, everybody has really tried. Oftentimes in the face of crisis, people work really well together, and I think people have really tried. They've gotten together and worked towards being as flexible as possible, as flexible as you can be, though, with someone's constitutional rights. And it's that what is good for individuals, and this is really a difficult one for me because I'm telling staff, I understand you have to take care of yourself. You have to be safe. That's almost in opposition of what our clients need. Our clients need direct communication. They need that contact. They need to be able to have that back and forth. It's really hard to do with technology and Zoom. I mean, my clients have questions. The criminal justice system is difficult. It's complicated. My clients come in with all kinds of issues and needs, and not to be able to talk with the attorney sitting next to them is so difficult. And we are very concerned that are they understanding what's being said to them? Are they understanding what's going forward? There, you know, a lot of the technology has places where I can stop a hearing and say, okay, I need everybody else to go out and I need to have this confidential information or conversation with my client. But it's much more difficult. It is also what we've tried to impress upon people. It's so important for my client to be present and to be in that courtroom, to be able to talk with that judge. So facial expressions, just think of how much we pick up. I don't think we really notice how much we pick up by body language and facial expressions. Having those individuals in the courtroom that can speak on their behalf to say, hey, this is my son, this is my daughter, this is my child.
All those avenues currently not immediately available. Kelly Thompson, our guest, Wisconsin State Public Defender, and room for you at 1-800-642-1234. You are listening to the State Capitol Report, and I'm Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Kate Archer Kent today on The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Kate Archer Kent today, and our guest is Kelly Thompson, who oversees the executive branch state agency that guarantees legal representation in Wisconsin with a stated goal of justice for all. Their mission statement actually includes zealotry. I'm quoting from it here, to zealously represent clients, protect constitutional rights, and advocate for an effective and fair criminal justice system. Kelly Zealotry in the executive branch, and you know, considering the commitment to defending everybody in Wisconsin, what about those who are accused and where they stand today, and the state of our prisons and jails in Wisconsin? What do you know?
Well, zealously, as I have said to everybody, that is our mission, and we are committed to our mission and to fulfilling our mission. We just have to find different ways to go about it now. So when jails put into place all non-contact visits, we have to find opportunities to communicate with our clients, and that is difficult. When we are not able to be, as I mentioned in the earlier minutes, present with our clients, that is difficult. Those communications are so important. We can put some things off. There's no doubt. We can hearings can be adjourned. Our clients are out of custody. Things can be put off. But we have to remember, we're putting a pause on people's lives. These cases, people struggle with anxiety and issues and the stress of when these cases continually are put off. But that's something that we have to do. That's something that we have to put in or take into account. People in jail and in prisons, they're scared. They're stressed. They are not able to social distance. Everybody, and I recognize that law enforcement has been on and corrections people, they are trying everything that they can, but they're physically limited. Our jails and prisons have been overcrowded. We know that. People get ill. They get sick. So we are constantly hearing from our clients about just their concern and from their family members. So all of these things are taken into consideration. The criminal justice system has to continue. It has to move forward. We can't put a pause on it, but we do have to find ways in a very limited circumstance that we are able to do our jobs. And that has been, I will say, it's been a challenge. Yeah, everybody's working collaboratively and working together, but it is a challenge because people need to be, their constitutional rights need to be protected, and due process is so important. And we can't say, hey, we'll look at that in a few months. It has to move forward today.
Last month, Milwaukee County Circuit Court Clerk John Barrett said that they're trying to limit all in-person contact with the courts except for processing arrests in certain cases.
We need to keep the jail from overcrowding. We need to keep domestic violence cases from creating greater difficulties in our community. And those are, right now, our priorities.
Kelly, are we seeing inmates being released from jail to alleviate some of the concerns?
Early on, we saw a fair number of people released pre-trial in the jails, and that was important. So to have people do something what we call like an order in, and I think that's really important. I mean, these are people that are innocent until proven guilty. We had people that were put on something called holds. So they were people that were on some type of supervision, extended supervision, probation supervision, that were put on holds because of, it could be anything from missing appointments to what was accused of some other criminal activity. It could be missing appointments, whatever that may be, that they may have been taken into custody. Those holds were the Department of Corrections tried to review those holds very quickly and to get people back out on supervision with new rules or new restrictions if necessary. But they moved people out of custody more quickly. We're seeing a decrease in revocation hearings. Because probation and parole are looking at opportunities to keep people in the community and work with them. Because, again, limiting that exposure, people going in and out of custody. Actual people being released from prison, people that have been sentenced and maybe have extraordinarily health conditions, people that are elderly, people that are older, over the age of 60, that have sat in prison for decades, depending on the crimes. We've been looking at some of those cases and reviewing those. A few have been out, but very few. I mean, those numbers would be very few. But again, the actual individuals being arrested, overall, we've seen a general decrease. That could change over summer, especially if those individuals have been given, again, what I called an order in, so that those, you know, our courts will be flooded in summer. But there definitely has been a decrease in the number of people that flow going in and out of jail.
Kelly Thompson is Wisconsin State Public Defender, and if you have a question for her, our phone number is 1-800-642-1234. Are you currently represented by a state public defender, and did the pandemic have any effect on your case? If so, I'd be curious to know how. And when it comes to the push for a speedy trial, Kelly, what can you do in your role? What can your office do to try to continue to expedite these processes?
Well, again, as I mentioned earlier, we have one that I think will be going forward if it actually goes forward next week. Judges are very cognizant of that, of people's rights. If they can't meet those needs, those individuals are released from custody, and then that takes care of the speedy trial demand. But the speedy trial demand that has been put in place and has fallen in this period of time, some judges have found extraordinary circumstances that they can't meet those needs because of the pandemic. They can't. I mean, again, and it is, you know, jurors just would not come into the courtroom. I mean, we have to sit a jury panel, and a jury will not come in. That would be a consideration. We can petition the Supreme Court to say we have extraordinary circumstances that this case has to go forward, if necessary. But it's, again, just everybody, and this really is at the local level. It is really, with those guidelines the Supreme Court put in place, it's really working together and everybody trying. People are looking at gyms, looking at school gyms to use so that people can spread out. They're looking at using multiple courtrooms. They're looking at using technology to do something what we call voir dire, which means ask the questions to the jurors so that we can sit and panel a jury. Again, it's looking at all of those different issues so that when we have our first jury trial, which could be very soon, that people feel comfortable. And it's, again, that comfort level. The last thing I want is to say next to my client is have a jury go forward and looking at a panel of jurors that I know are scared to death to be there, and they'll do anything just to get out of there. I mean, what a terrible thing for them, what a terrible thing for the court, and certainly, most importantly, what a terrible thing for my poor client.
Kelly, does your office have the personal protection equipment you need to be able to meet with inmates in the jail facilities where, as you point out, there can be no social distancing at this time?
We have, our staff have been using, when they feel it's appropriate, their own masks, their own face coverings, and some jails are requiring it, so they have those. We have a lot of that on order for masks. That's going to be required in many courtrooms, so hopefully we'll have that in our office very soon. Like everybody else, hand sanitizer and all of the cleaning equipment, especially the hand sanitizer, has been on, you know, everybody. That's tough for everyone to find. So we've been working with the courts and the administration to say, what do we do? So everyone's looking in every possible way. We were fortunate to get something for all of our offices this week that we will be able to actually, I will be in a car driving it around the state as much as possible. So our offices will have it so we can protect our staff as much as possible. I will say staff have been amazing. I mean, this has been extraordinarily difficult for them, and they have put clients first. They really believe that their clients need to be represented, and that is a really tough situation because balancing your own health with what you feel you need to do in your job, and we see that. We call it, you know, our everyday heroes, right? We see those in every field, in the grocery stores and in our communities and certainly our hospitals and our nurses and doctors. And you know what? Those are public defenders. They're out there every single day meeting with their clients and working with the community and working with witnesses and working with family members. And they're putting their jobs first. And it's a really, as the head of an agency, it's a really difficult position for me to be in, but that's the job we signed up for.
I can hear the pride as well, but for those who are wondering whether or not your clients through the state's public defender's office should be a priority in this pandemic, what would you say to them?
Oh, absolutely. These are people's individual liberties. This is what our Constitution is based on. This is what people, you are accused of a crime, you have those rights. You are innocent until proven guilty. Our clients are individuals who walk among us every single day. These are our children. These are our parents. These are our grandparents, our aunts and uncles. And the criminal justice system is something that is it's scary for people. It's there certainly to protect people, but people absolutely need to be able to be represented. They need to be heard, and people's due process rights need to be respected. And then I see that, and honestly, in all all conversations with the courts, people recognize that. They recognize that people's liberties are of the utmost importance. And even during a pandemic, we can all be flexible and we can all bend and we can all do things today that we would not have done, you know, 6 months ago, and hopefully won't be doing it six months later. But it is so important that people's rights are respected. That's what we're based on.
Kelly Thompson, Wisconsin State Public Defender, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you so much. I truly appreciate it, and happy Memorial Day to you.
Stay safe and be well. This is the State Capitol Report, and the State Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinecke joins us after the news. And if you've got a question for him, we've got an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Kate Archer Kent today, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Should the state's legislature's role be in this pandemic? Here to help us answer that question this morning on this Memorial Day is the Majority Leader of our State Assembly, Jim Steinecke, joins us for the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent, and your questions are welcome at 1-800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Representative Jim Steinecke is a Republican representing Wisconsin's 5th Assembly District, including Kaukauna. It goes north of Appleton and west of Green Bay. State Representative, good morning.
Good morning, Lee. How are you doing?
It's Memorial Day and holiday weekend, so I'm feeling festive, and I see that Outagamie County rescinded its local Safer at Home order on Friday. Your community testing site, in conjunction with Winnebago and Calumet counties, closed after testing more than 3,000 people. What are you seeing where you are this morning?
Well, what we're seeing is, by and large, as I expected, businesses are slowly reopening. They're taking their time to make sure that they have safety precautions in place. A lot of them had been preparing for this day early on, so some of them were able to open their doors earlier than others. But I've really been impressed by the fact that even though they were allowed to open up their doors right away, a lot of businesses have decided to hold off until they have those plans in place and those precautions in place that can protect the employees and their customers.
I feel like we're in these new social norms where I'm not to wear a mask or not to wear a mask, and the way the looks you get, whatever choice you make.
Right.
Personally, what precautions have you been taking to stay safe?
I've been trying to follow the CDC guidelines as much as possible, and especially where stores that are busier and require masks. Obviously, we're wearing masks. I think that there's this perception out there among some that wearing masks is somehow inhibiting their freedom at stores. People have to remember that private stores, private entities have the absolute right to require people to wear masks when they come into their stores. So I would encourage people not to push back against that, because this is an important part of how we're going to do business going forward for a while.
And those are private businesses who have their own choices to make about the safety of their employees?
Absolutely. Same thing. I mean, we're encouraging, just like the administration is, businesses to follow the WEDC guidelines that were set out for safely reopening their businesses. I think that's an important part, not only for keeping the people safe, but making people feel secure when they go out and they're shopping in local stores.
Consumer confidence is going to play a role in how we reopen here. And, in your position as the Assembly Majority Leader, what can we do to support consumer confidence in Wisconsin?
I think, the important thing is that we continue to show that businesses are taking those precautions, that it is by and large safe to go out if those precautions are taken, if you're not gathering in large crowds. without those safety precautions. So I think the more people start to get out, the more they see that businesses are taking these steps to ensure their safety, I think the more confident people will get. And of course, testing plays a big role in that. As we go forward, as we continue to see the percentage of positive tests either be level or fall off, I think that's going to be important as well.
Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinecke joining us this morning. And Representative, you supported local public health restrictions following the state Supreme Court order that ended statewide closures. Now those local restrictions are facing court challenges. Do you see any role here for the state legislature to help clarify local control?
Well, I think one thing people misunderstand is the fact that these local, county and local public health departments have had the tools in the toolbox to deal with infectious diseases forever, right? I mean, it goes uncovered because most of these outbreaks with infectious diseases are relatively minor. So now that this is a much more widespread issue, it's obviously getting more coverage, but they do have the ability to put restrictions in place at a local level. What the state Supreme Court said was that they just don't have the ability, and the state doesn't either, to indiscriminately shut down businesses and force healthy people to stay home. And I think that's the line we have to walk.
At the local level as well as the state level?
Absolutely.
Okay. At this time, do you see hospitals across the state with capacity to manage a potential surge in cases if that were to be the case?
Yeah, we've been in constant contact with hospitals. All of our members have been talking to hospitals in their regions. I was on the phone with Northeast Wisconsin Hospitals a little over a week ago now, and they said that no matter when we reopen, they expected a surge in cases, but they said that they were prepared for that surge. We've seen the number of hospitalizations throughout the state, even as the numbers fluctuate for the total positives. The numbers of hospitalizations have remained remarkably steady, right around 350 hospitalizations statewide, nowhere near crisis levels in any part of the state right now.
And yet the numbers of, we've got 510 dead as a result of COVID-19 in Wisconsin. What more can be done here? What do you see as actions we can take, or are we on the right path?
I think we're on the right path. I mean, this virus is going to be with us for a while, unfortunately. We can't hang around and, keep the economy shuttered until there's a vaccine. We just can't do that to the economy. We can't do that to people. There'll be far greater fallout from the impoverished state of the economy if we didn't get back to work and get back to some sense of normalcy, even though we're not going to be back to normal anytime real soon.
But can it be done better? Are there more testing? Is there more contact tracing? Is there more funds? Is there more of anything that needs to be done at this point?
Well, Governor Evers has $2 billion at his disposal. He set aside $1 billion for testing and tracing. I think the administration is doing a pretty good job of increasing testing throughout the state. I mean, I think we're up around 10,000, 12,000 tests a day at some points here, which I think was the original goal of the administration. So I think we're in a good spot there. Contact tracing is obviously a priority as well, and I know the Evers administration is working hard on that. So I think we're on the right track.
Representative Jim Steinecke, Republican representing Wisconsin's 5th Assembly District. Freedom, Seymour, Hobart, what do you see where you are this morning? 1-800-642-1234. We have a committee of legislators who are going to have the final say, as I understand it, over any new statewide emergency rules that could come down the pike. What kind of plan are you looking for from the Evers administration here to address the coronavirus pandemic in Wisconsin? Or are you looking for the Evers administration to step back and let local control continue?
The Evers administration is not pursuing a rule. They withdrew okay. that a week ago, so they decided not to try to impose any further statewide restrictions. And it's important for people to remember as well that those restrictions were due to expire this week.
Tomorrow.
So, and Evers administration said he was not extending the safer at home order beyond May 26th. So I think we're in a place that we would have been likely anyway. But yeah, he decided a week ago not to pursue a rule. So there likely won't be anything.
You and your colleagues have said you don't think there should be the statewide rule now, and there won't be. How would you feel about if we did see a surge in cases? And as you mentioned before, when we reopen, we're going to see a surge in cases. There may be a push and a call for some more restrictions. Do you see the possibility of a statewide rule here?
I don't think at this point we can say predict the future, but I would say going forward, the most appropriate place are going to be those local, the county and local health departments, because any of these spikes tend to be more localized in nature. So I think that's where we're going to see it. I mean, we had approached the Evers administration about doing a more regional plan, so we didn't shut down every corner of the state, but then restrictions could be enforced in a broader area than just county by county or municipality by municipality. But the Evers administration wasn't interested in that, so we couldn't pursue that any further.
While we don't know the future, you did say that when we reopen, we're going to see a surge in cases. We are pushing as we slowly reopen here, and we're going to see a surge in cases. And you know that inevitably when that happens, there will be a call to do something about it. And the question will be what action will be taken. And the answer will be we'll continue to look at our local level. Would there be a point, though, where the state legislature would get involved?
It's really difficult to say. I mean, now remember, when we talk about surge in cases, you're going to see a surge in cases. The important thing to keep an eye on is the hospitalizations, right? Because this was never about preventing people from getting the virus forever. This was about, the safer at home. It was originally, 15 days to flatten the curve, if we remember that. By and large, we have done that. It was all about making sure that the hospitals weren't overrun and that they had time to prepare to have an influx of patients. So I think that's the point we're at now. And the vast majority of the country where we're seeing states open up, we are not seeing massive spikes in infections or massive surge in hospitals. So we have to look at that data as well.
State Representative Jim Steinecke joining us for your state capitol report this morning. And if you have a question for him, we have a line for you at 1-800-642-1234. I'd like to know if you are a business owner, what you think about the state's reopening, what you think about the regional plans for our state as we move forward in this pandemic and try to get this economy back on track and people back to work. So if you have an inclination about this, how do you feel about the Supreme Court striking down the governor's safer at home order? Do you agree with the ruling? How do you want lawmakers to respond, or should they respond at all at this point? And what do you see locally where you are at 1-800-642-1234 or ideas at WPR.org? We're in the midst of your state capitol report. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. The State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and my entire family owes an infinite debt of gratitude to Wisconsin's selfless long-term care workers. My grandmother and her sister were raised together, they fought together, cussed together, partied together, and they were able to lovingly die together after amazing lives that really deserve their own ballads. The ballad of Izzy and Rose, and there may be a few long-term care workers who know exactly what I'm talking about. Our guest is raising the alarm about the conditions inside our long-term care facilities and the workers' immediate needs right now. Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinecke, also here to answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234. And State Representative, last week you sent a letter to the governor asking about our long-term care facilities. What did you have to impart to him, and what was his response?
Well, so the governor has, as I said earlier, the discretion to utilize that $2 billion that came from the federal government through the CARES Act at his discretion. He can unilaterally spread that out, money out however he wants. The point I was trying to make is that I think nursing homes should be at the very front of the list when it comes to getting resources through that CARES Act, because nursing homes are the places where we have seen 40% of the deaths here in the state. And obviously the most vulnerable population lives in those nursing homes. Unfortunately, Governor Evers so far has, although the announcement last week that he was allocating $100 million towards these efforts, the reality is we found out on Friday that only $24 million, so about 1.2% of the $2 billion, is actually going towards nursing homes to help them in their fight against the coronavirus. And I think that's unconscionable. I think there's about $400 million left out of that $2 billion that the governor has to spend. We are desperately encouraging him to provide more resources to those nursing homes.
So as he announced it, and he announced it last week, what you have seen paid out so far is a mere percentage of that announcement?
No, the $100 million, although it was reported as the $100 million was going to long-term care in very broad terms, nursing homes themselves are only going to get about $24 million out of that $100 million. And that $24 million reflects about 1.2% of the total, the $2 billion that he has to spend. So what we're saying is that we have one nursing home here in Kaukauna that this year alone will lose $3 million just on fighting the coronavirus. So $3 million in additional costs just because of coronavirus, and the governor is only dedicating $24 million total for the entire state.
Is there anything the state legislature can do in that?
No. Unfortunately, we have no control over how the governor spends that money, and as I'm sure you're aware, the state itself doesn't have the resources to spend money at this point because our surplus is gone and we're looking at likely deficits going forward. And unlike the federal government, we can't just print money. So we have to live within our means and look to the federal government in case we need additional resources.
Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinecke joining us for the State Capitol Report. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to join the show. Greg from Sheboygan joining us this morning. Greg, you're on with Representative Jim Steinecke.
Hello. Good morning. I believe I was a biochemist for years. I'm retired now. And I worked in epidemiology, and I worked in virology, and I worked in microbiology, bacteriology. And I believe that when you have a virus like this that's so communicable, you have to have comprehensive testing. And I believe to open the state up prematurely that the whole Republican legislature and the conservative judges are guilty of first-degree manslaughter and for every death. I mean, it's obvious to me that it's stupid. So
all
you
right.
Have a good day.
Greg, thank you. Obviously upset about the situation, but...
Yeah.
Everybody feels a little powerless, right? Everybody feels a little helpless. And when you turn to people in power and you wonder, what more can we do?
Yeah, and I understand Greg's frustration. I mean, I think obviously that was a little over the top, but I understand where his frustrations and his fears are coming from because this is an incredibly difficult time for everybody. The truth is that we are hitting the goals that the Evers administration set out originally for testing, as far as being able to test 85,000 people a week. We are able to do that now, and testing has ramped up. And like I said, the administration is doing a good job of that. So I think we're hitting the right marks for testing. But I can completely understand where Greg's frustrations come in, because I think we're all feeling a little helpless in the face of something that we've never seen before in this country. Or at least not for 100 years.
Let's try it again. Jamie in Little Chute, you are on with Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinecke.
Good morning, gentlemen. My question is a little bit more surgical, I guess. When now that we have a little bit more data behind us, and I don't really make this a party line issue that any one party made a mistake. I have zero issue with how we initially handled it. But now that we have more data and we're seeing the nursing home deaths in Wisconsin over 40%, in Minnesota 85%, I really don't understand why we don't have a more surgical approach to protect those elderly homes much more. And then at the same token, we're really holding back youth activities, young people's lives, when it really just the data supports we're not doing enough in one and we seem to be way too conservative in the other.
Thank you, Jamie. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Jamie. And maybe Jamie and my kids play baseball together, because I've been frustrated by that too. You know, the hardest thing is, you know, I'm a big baseball guy, and so are my kids, and not being able to get out on the fields has been difficult. But that's one of the, you know, to Jamie's other point about the nursing homes, that's exactly why we're frustrated with that, with the lack of resources going to nursing homes across the state, because they are exponentially higher at risk than anybody else at the state. We should be devoting a majority of the resources there. I mean, the governor gave, I think, over $400 million to hospitals, which is important, but hospitals have much more ability to raise revenue through other means. Nursing homes don't, and they are in trouble right now, and we're likely to see more and more closures of nursing homes throughout the state, with less places for our elderly to go, unless the governor steps up and allocates more of that $2 billion towards nursing homes.
We began this morning talking about the unemployment numbers in the state of Wisconsin and the difficulty that the unemployed are having in getting in contact with the Department of Workforce Development and get their unemployment insurance. Pam called from Green Bay earlier and wanted to talk about the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, which we talked about earlier. And I'm wondering what you need to see or what needs to happen here for issues for the unemployed in Wisconsin to be addressed. What can be done and by whom?
Well, and this is, again, you know, something that I give the administration, I cut them some slack for, especially early on, is the massive influx of calls starting to come in for unemployment claims. I understand why they were behind the curve on that. I think they were far too slow on the uptake to expand hours for a long time. They were only working until 3:30 in the afternoon. Now they've expanded them to the hours till 5 o'clock and added some call centers, which I think is important. We've also suggested that they can bring more employees over, state employees. They have the ability to move state employees from one agency to another to help with the call load. They also have the ability to do what's called presumptive approval, where they could approve the claims up front and then do investigation afterwards to get the money out the door quicker. And if the claims were found fraudulent or denied, that they could claw back that money after. But we have far too many people in the state that have been waiting 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks for their unemployment money and have gotten nothing. And it's really putting some people in desperate situations.
Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinecke, thank you as always for joining us this morning.
Absolutely. And happy Memorial Day. And thanks to everybody who has served or is serving and all the sacrifices they and their families have made. We really appreciate it.
State Representative Jim Steinecke, Republican representing Wisconsin's 5th Assembly District of the Kaukauna area, just north of Appleton. For more state politics, tune into Central Time this afternoon. Milwaukee State Representative Daniel Reamer joins us to discuss how Final Five and ranked voting works. It's more democracy. Is more democracy better? Find out later. Just ahead, while some people celebrate Memorial Day among family and friends outside on the grill, we discuss the history and the origins of the federal holiday. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent. This has been the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.